This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 16th of January 2015. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 16th of January 2015, which this week have been edited by Gordon and Liz Legg. And your readers today are Shirley Parrell.
Hello.
Andrew Smith.
Hello.
And Lynn Parker.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now, the main headlines this week are Hospital Ignored Pleas to Declare Emergency, Silver Hill Could Be Delayed for Decade, and Have Your Say on Council Tax Rise. May we have the story behind the first headline? Shirley.
Hospital ignored pleas to declare emergency. Winchester Hospital managers refused to declare a major incident despite repeated requests by senior doctors, the Hampshire Chronicle has been told. The emergency department at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital has been struggling with admissions, especially during a four-day period earlier this month. Now, all operations except for cancer and emergencies have been postponed to ease the pressure. Senior clinicians wanted the major incident declared between January 3rd to the 6th, but managers refused, allegedly because it would look bad in the media, and the trust would be fined for diverting ambulances to other hospitals. At one stage, there were 28 patients in the ambulance corridor and waiting area. An 82-year-old woman had to wait on a trolley for 12 hours and have a medical inspection in a semi-public corridor. Her daughter, who asked not to be named, said, "My mother, who had suffered a heart attack, was kept in a corridor and examined, including having her top lifted when there were other people, so there was no privacy or dignity. The A&D staff are great. The ambulance crew was great, but there's something wrong with the setup. I found the whole situation mad and not really acceptable." A member of staff, who asked not to be named for fear of being disciplined, said, "It is unsafe. It is going to take somebody to die before things change. There was a huge lack of patient safety caused by unprecedented demand and escalated by a lack of care and compassion by hospital management. The extent of the crisis is allegedly being distorted because of the way admissions are being recorded," it is claimed. The whistleblower alleges patients arriving by ambulance are being booked in a way that did not trigger the clock for the four-hour target. "The staff think this is outrageous. I can only assume they, the managers, have found a loophole. It is fudging the reality of the situation. People are on A&D trolleys when they should be in proper beds and not getting bed sores." A former member of staff, who also asked not to be named, said this week, "The practice of queuing patients is nothing new. The department books patients in on a part of the computer screen called ambulance queue. This then counts on the stats as a handover, absolving the ambulance service of responsibility, but means the hospital then queues the patients in the corridor. In the period between January 1st to the 12th, the A&D unit dealt with 83.1% of patients within 4 hours, instead of the 95% target, and with a total of 3,555 people attending the unit. In a statement, Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust said, "Unfortunately, we have had to take some difficult decisions, and we've had to postpone planned operations, except cancer surgery and emergency surgery, which will continue. We apologise for the inconvenience to patients, and operations will be rescheduled as soon as possible. Donna Green, Deputy Chief Executive, said, "By declaring a major incident, this usually results in a neighbouring hospital taking some of the patients. But we know, because we are in regular contact with them, that our neighbouring hospitals are all as busy as we are. Therefore, we do not see an advantage in declaring a major incident at this time. We are a clinically led organisation, which means that our doctors and nurses are always involved in making decisions. The safety of our patients is always our first priority. Accurate reporting is very important, and we take it very seriously at all times. To clarify, the clock starts ticking on the four-hour target from the moment each patient is booked in, and once they are triaged, all patients are cared for by HFVT staff, releasing our ambulance service colleagues to attend life-threatening calls. We are following the national requirements for recording patients, waiting times, and refute any suggestion otherwise."
Thank you. And can we have the story behind the second headline, please, Andrew?
Okay, Silver Hill could be delayed for decade. Henderson bosses warning over judicial review. The regeneration of Silver Hill will take at least another decade if a key council decision is overturned in the courts, the project's boss has warned. Winchester City Council will be forced to spend years repeating the legal wrangles of the £165 million scheme if it loses a judicial review this month, according to Henderson Development Director Martin Perry. Legal costs could also damage the firm's cash pledge for affordable housing in the city, he added. Campaigner Councillor Kim Gottlieb is taking his own Tory administration to London's High Court on January the 28th to argue that they broke European law when they allowed the firm to propose controversial changes to the major scheme of shops and homes. In an exclusive interview with the Hampshire Chronicle, Mr. Perry said civic chiefs will have to repeat lengthy design, planning, consultation and compulsory purchase processes if the judge rules that they should have put the scheme out to competitive tender. "This has been going on for God knows how long," he said. "About 20-odd years trying to get this scheme off the ground. That's why I can't for one moment think why you would want to start again. It would take another 10 years at least to get it again." Rebuilding the neglected city centre quarter was first touted in 1996, and the developers' amended plans were approved by city planners last month after almost 20 years of debate, protest and legal hurdles. "I hope it wouldn't kill Winchester," Mr. Perry added. "I don't think it would, because there's enough tourism to keep it going. There will just be a deep and heavy sigh. I can't see in any way how that could be advantageous to the people of Winchester to go through another 10 years. To get where?" He added that six-figure legal bills could dent profits and the £2 million affordable housing payout it promised councillors if it makes a 15% return. Councillor Gottlieb's three-pronged action against the scheme includes another planned legal offensive and an appeal to local government secretary Eric Pickles to call a public inquiry. Branding Mr. Perry's delay warnings complete nonsense, Mr. Gottlieb said, "If the matter was competently managed, there's no reason why the development brief could not be updated within a matter of months. The whole scheme could be revisited and put out to the open market within the year."
Let's have the third headline story, please, Lynn.
Have your say on council tax rise. PCC proposing 1.99% increase for policing. People in Hampshire face a council tax hike as the county's Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes looks to plug the gap in the force's budget. Mr. Hayes, pictured, has asked the public to have their say on a potential 1.99% council tax precept rise for the policing budget next year. This equates to a rise of £3.07 a year for an average Band D household paying council tax. The increase would generate an additional £2 million, which is the cost of employing 43 officers, he said. The results of public consultation are now being assessed to decide if the hike should be imposed, if a larger increase should be made of almost 3%, or if both amounts are too high and should be lowered. Mr. Hayes was left disappointed last year after a 2% cap was imposed by the government on the policing tax precept, which forced him to dip into the forces reserves to make up a £973,000 shortfall. He has warned that he may need to look at further increases in the coming years as the extent of the cuts and imposed caps start to emerge. Just last month, it was revealed in a letter how Hampshire Police is at very significant risk because of savage funding cuts. The letter, sent by the Force Strategic Independent Advisory Group, called on MPs to join a campaign to stem the cuts and the damage being done. It also called on the county's MPs to attend a meeting with Mr. Hayes on January the 20th, when the impact of the cuts will be discussed. The force needs to save £25 million by 2016 as part of the government spending review, which could see hundreds of jobs lost, police stations shut and roles changed as it looks to plug the gap. Mr. Hayes said, "With Hampshire Constabulary currently making significant changes to the way it operates, to enable it to make £80 million in savings due to government-imposed cuts that have already been imposed, it has never been more important to consult with the public over the policing element of the council tax precept. HMIC, Her Majesty's Inspectorate of Constabulary, recently announced that Hampshire Constabulary remains a low-cost, well-performing force, and I question whether the constabulary can withstand any further cuts without it impacting on the level of neighbourhood policing people expect. If we are to continue delivering the highest possible levels of service and honour my commitment to protect neighbourhood policing across the communities of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, we must have the funding in place to do so. I am therefore left with no option but to propose a preset increase."
And that concludes the headline stories. And now we'll continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, Belgarum diary, first person, and then chronicle comment. I'll start with the death notices. Benham, Graham Benham, aged 79, peacefully. Cause: Maureen, nay Winkworth, cause, peacefully with her family, aged 78. Culver: Alice Peg Culver, MBE, in Southampton General Hospital, aged 96. Donovan: Sheila Donovan, peacefully in her sleep, aged 78. Edelston: Jean Edelston, shortly after Christmas. Kirby: Peter Kirby, unexpectedly aged 82. Lee, Phyllis Patricia Lee, peacefully in Winchester Hospital, aged 91. Lee Spaulding, June Sandis Lister Lee Spaulding, peacefully at home. Locke, Charles Henry Harry Locke, peacefully at home, aged 97. Long, Ada Elizabeth Long, aged 97. Manley, Jennifer, nay Dangerfield Manley, peacefully at Oak Haven Hospice, aged 82. Peak, Margaret Ann, nay Moran Peak, aged 76. Plews, Bob Plews, in Winchester Hospital, aged 94. Poulton, John Poulton, peacefully at home, surrounded by his family, aged 91. Ranger, Denise Marjorie Ranger, formerly of Otterbourne Grange, aged 89. Rutter, Doris Rutter, peacefully aged 93. Smith, John Lewis Frederick Smith, aged 72. Trivett, Adelaide Trivett, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital following a short illness, aged 91. Walker, Keith Walker, formerly of Chestnut Avenue, Colden Common, suddenly but peacefully, aged 89. And finally, Tiller, James Jim Tiller, peacefully, aged 92. And now we've got Christian comment, read by Shirley.
Yes, it's headed, "Do unto others as you would like them to do unto you." And it's written by Rosemary A. Baker. In the last days of 2014, I became a great aunt for the first time. I'm not sure if this involves anything special other than being a supportive family member. So far, I have bought a card but not posted it, having mislaid the address, but I have written comments and ticked lots of likes on Facebook. I have been very touched by the way the young parents have chosen in all the pictures to portray themselves with their new baby daughter as a family unit. In this time, following the Epiphany, the church has been focusing on the baptism of Christ. This took place when Jesus was an adult, but is very much about Jesus being the Son of God. Christians of all denominations are joined with Jesus in their baptism as children of God. As followers of Christ and children of God, we believe we are called to live following his example and living as he told us to, loving God and our neighbour. This can be seen as doing unto others as you would like them to do unto you. Families have their ups and downs, rifts and reunions, and so it is within the Christian family. Living together, whether as a family or community, involves some rules, albeit unwritten, of behaviour towards each other, and this includes respect for their particular beliefs and how they live their lives. I do recall a family birthday when a cousin's wife told my sister-in-law she was drinking too much. We all knew this, but it wasn't the sort of thing we commented on in public. Interestingly, my sister-in-law has seriously curtailed her alcohol intake, but the cousin and his wife have been missing from recent celebrations. The news and media have been buzzing with the terrorist attacks in Paris. Sadly, yesterday the satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo, the headquarters of where the first attack took place, printed a special edition, again with a cartoon of the Prophet Muhammad on the front page. They say it is honouring their colleagues who died and the freedom of the press that they stood for, and the basis of French culture that embraces this. The copies are selling like hotcakes, and a failing magazine is receiving an injection of funds that will revive it. I'm afraid I think it shows a lack of respect, as it did the first time it happened. The fact that they also show disrespect to other religious leaders, such as the Pope, is also no defence. Je suis Jesus.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and the normal post office address is the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S-O-2-3-8-A-L. And there are 10 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Andrew.
And the first one is from Mr. T. Hart of Maytree Close in Winchester. And the title is "Bus Firm's Abysmal Performance." Sir, I would like to highlight the abysmal performance of Stagecoach in providing a service to get the people of Badger Farm to work for the week December 29 to January 2nd. Although there were 4 working days and 1 bank holiday, they only provided a Saturday service, which meant the first bus would not arrive at Sainsbury's until 07:17. On Monday, 4 out of 9 people waiting left to find an alternative means of travel at 07:40, as no bus had come. On Tuesday, the bus arrived over 10 minutes late. And on Friday, I gave up at 07:35 as the bus again failed to appear. The council has come in for criticism for cutting back on bus services. But when the service provider is as unreliable as Stagecoach, perhaps they shouldn't take all the blame.
Will falcons be doing bird? Sir, from Michael Fielding, Cheriton Road, Winchester. Sir, a recent article in the Chronicle told readers that the peregrine falcons, which currently nest on the roof of the police headquarters, will be rehoused at HM Prison when the Hampshire Constabulary site is redeveloped. Does this mean that birds will be doing bird?
And this one is from Sarah Robinson, and it's headed, "Only 4 months to go." Sir, I have just received another party electioneering paper informing me that the Liberal Democrats have single-handedly, and no doubt at a single bound, reduced my tax bill. Maybe I'm getting forgetful in my old age, but can anyone else remember when they wanted an extra 1 penny on income tax for the health service and another penny for education? It is wonderful having a selective memory, picking and choosing the policies they think we might like and taking the credit for them. Hey ho, only another 4 months of this. God help us. Sarah Robinson, Old Station Road, Itchenabas.
And the next one is from the Reverend Simon Ridley, the former rector of Basingstoke, and Families Proud Association. Sir, someone showed me your December 16th Chronicle website piece about my great-nephew, Teddy Ridley, now head chorister at the cathedral. It took me back 70 years and more. I became a chorister in 1941 and sang through the rest of World War II with that huge building somehow blacked out for winter evensong. It was my privilege to become principal solo boy when I was 11 in 1944. But early in May 1945, I got pneumonia. I was seriously ill in bed for VE Day, and my voice broke early. Nevertheless, they made me head chorister, but on the condition that I only mouthed the words and didn't sing. Towards the end of a boring year doing this, King George VI and Queen Elizabeth came to Winchester, I think in May 1946. For their visit to the cathedral, the choir assembled near the west door. The Dean, Dr. Gordon Selwyn, presented his head chorister. As instructed, I duly bowed my head and said, "Your Majesty." The King stammered to the Dean, "Why has this choir boy got a bass voice?" None of us had ever seen the redoubtable Dean nonplussed before. My middle brother, Adam, Teddy's grandfather, became head chorister 4 years after me. Our much younger brother, Giles, far the best musician of us all, was pipped to the post. He was only deputy to one Julian Pike, who went on to be a professional singer. His daughter, Rosamund Pike, is an actress your readers will have heard of. Let me just add this. Our connection with the cathedral choir is something, as a family, we value beyond measure. May it flourish forever. The Reverend Simon Ridley from Tenterden in Kent.
Now we have a letter from John Duckworth, 5 Bells Lane, Netherwallop, Stockbridge. Sir, Mr. Lydiard's recent proposal that the 1870s model of Winchester could be displayed as an adjunct to the Tourist Information Centre was very rightly enthusiastically endorsed by Ian Stenning, Chronicle Letters, who broached the problem of funding its housing when found. Perhaps a Hampshire charity whose charitable aims encompass the obvious public benefit of preserving for the city such an intriguing model of great interest to both locals and tourists could sponsor the venture and give donations the multiplier of gift aid. I, for one, would subscribe up to £1,000 towards that end, and I am sure that many others in Winchester and its neighbourhood would generously support a project which, unlike those others which have exercised or are exercising our current planners and rulers and are so detrimental to the city and its environments, would positively enhance and encourage a visit to the city. Unlike a ramble through the jumble of Silver Hill, as now proposed, or up the Roman Road, now cunningly to be entangled in a vast housing estate, destroying the downland setting of the city, neither of which is likely to attract many tourists to the ancient capital of this country, or to improve it in the eyes of its present inhabitants. Will anyone follow up these suggestions? It would be nice to hear from the council, and indeed an editorial from you and... or a comment from one of your excellent columnists, which would not go amiss on such a worthwhile project.
Now...
This letter is headed Deluded Over Strength of Feeling, and it's from Michael Bidwell. Sir, what Mr. Geddes' letters, January the 1st, seems not to understand in defending Councillor Tait and the council's planning decision is that the product of public consultation on a major project can only be a critique of the plans in question. So to rail against that critique as being entirely negative is merely absurd. It is not the role of public consultation to generate and promote a replacement plan. It is the role, and indeed the specific responsibility of the process, to give serious consideration to the matters raised, with a view to modifying and improving the project. As it happens, as Mr. Geddes and the Planning Committee very well know, that a great deal of informed, considered, and constructive material emerged from that critique. It was officiously and often offensively dismissed. Two further points. To argue that a protest demonstration on the scale of November 29th should be seen as the whinging of a deluded few is to declare oneself a little weak in the public awareness stakes, and to characterise a protest whose principal slogan was "Homes, not shops," as NIMBYism, also smacks of some weakness in the thinking department. But perhaps we guessed all that. Michael Bidwell, Clifton Road, Winchester.
And from Paul Bright from Perth and Kinross. This proposal goes against good archaeological practice. Sir, I was an archaeologist for 20 years and was employed as a supervisor on the excavations at Hyde Abbey undertaken by Winchester Museum Service and Earthwatch in the late 1990s. I have very strong feelings that enough is enough with Hyde Abbey. It goes against all good archaeological practice, which aspires to only recording archaeology which will be destroyed or is under such threat from development, other human activity or natural processes. The Abbey site is not under threat, except from the archaeologists, and the presumption should be for preservation in situ. Archaeology destroys the resource it is recording, and normal good practice is to leave unthreatened sites for future generations who may have better techniques and equipment available, possibly even non-destructive techniques. Furthermore, the site has been excavated many times. Prisoners from the Bridewell robbed stone from the area. Numerous archaeological investigations have already taken place, and the area was even used for the building of air raid shelters in World War II, as evidenced in the 1997 excavation. The question remains, what is left to discover? And are the proposed excavations really just jumping on the Richard III bandwagon in an attempt solely to satisfy the proposer's own curiosity and further their careers? It need not be said that these are Christian burials, reinterred from the old stroke new minster. And it is both undignified and unnecessary to repeatedly desecrate the graves of our ancestors where good sense and good practice dictates otherwise. The garden is a lovely spot and has been built and cultivated at considerable expense and effort. To seek to destroy that work in order to ignore good archaeological practice and treasure hunt seems an appalling thing to consider, especially when one takes into account the material and paperwork from previous digs at the same site, which remain unanalysed and unpublished. I would even go so far as to suggest it shows a lack of integrity and care for the archaeology and residents of Winchester and Hyde. That's from Paul Bright, BA Honours, MSc, Fortingall, Perth and Kinross.
Thank you from the night shelter. Sir, Winchester Church's night shelter would like to say a huge belated thank you to all our supporters for your generosity over the Christmas period. This year we were inundated with donations of food and clothing, plus gifts for our 17 homeless residents to enjoy opening on Christmas Day, including retail and entertainment vouchers, chocolates, diaries, pens and puzzle books. With the help of our dedicated team of volunteers, we were also able to extend our Christmas and New Year's opening hours, opening our doors earlier in the evening and shutting later in the morning, so that night shelter residents were able to spend more time indoors. In 2014, we provided 115 people with a temporary home, nutritious food and vital support to help them escape homelessness for good. During the last year, we served up over 12,000 meals, ensuring night shelter residents were always able to start and end the day with a healthy, hearty meal, and distributed over £1,300 worth of toiletries, giving them access to daily essentials that most of us take for granted. This is all thanks to our wonderful supporters, volunteers and donors. Your support is invaluable, and we couldn't help as many people as we do without you. We are looking forward to continuing this great work with your help in 2015. From everyone at Winchester Church's Night Shelter, very many thanks. And the letter is from Michelle Price, Manager, Winchester Church's Night Shelter, Drury Street, Winchester.
This one is headed, Excavation Would Destroy This Much-Loved Memorial Garden. Sir, although I now live in Corhampton, I am still deeply involved with Hyde Abbey Garden and the Friends. While in Hyde, I did indeed instigate its creation, Chronicle Letters, December 18th. This was with enormous support from the Hampshire Gardens Trust, Hyde Historic Resources Centre staff and the City Council. However, it could not have happened without the commitment and financial support of the local community, business and many others. The garden is loved and admired by many people, those who regularly pass through, those who visit and those who live nearby. Kim Wilkie's design gave us a lasting legacy along with Tracy Shepherd's beautiful glass panel. It was most appropriate that it was adopted as the city's Golden Jubilee project. A dedicated group of friends have tended and nurtured the garden since 2003. Thanks to them, it has now matured, fulfilling its potential. Should the proposed re-excavation take place, all the vegetation is too well grown to survive a move and would have to be replaced with new. It would take another 14 years or so for it to mature once more. What a heartbreaking loss. All the specially commissioned structures would require very careful removal and storage. The Friends are seeking to prevent this happening. The last update we had was on July 30th, 2014, at a meeting convened by Simon Eden chief executive of the City Council with Professor Martin Biddle, Hyde 900, the university, and ourselves. Surely today there are non-invasive methods of archaeology available, such as geophysics, which give use increased knowledge in addition to that derived from the extensive excavations of 1997 to 99, without the heartbreaking destruction of something so significant and valued. Barbara Hall, Friends of Hyde Abbey Garden, Corehampton.
And from Jenny Davidson of the Winchester and District Stroke Support Group. Stroke Group collected £527. Sir, may I, through your columns, thank all those who kindly contributed to collections at Sainsbury's Badger Farm on November the 21st and at Tesco Winall on December the 19th. We made a total of £527, which will enable us to continue to provide interesting activities and outings for our members. We would like to thank the stores for their hospitality and to wish everyone a healthy and happy new year. Jenny Davidson, Stroke Support Group.
And that is the end of all the letters to the editor for this week. Thank you to all the contributors. Now it's time for your say. Passers-by in the Winchester area were asked, what do you think about the current crisis at A&Es around the country? Lynn has the answers.
Firstly, Diana Randall, 67, retired, of Winslade Road Hairstock, said, I do think they are in a mess. A lot of it is to do with the cutbacks and the bed blotting is a factor. There's quite a lot of it that needs to be sorted out, but I don't have the answer. Michael O'Brien, 31, a barista of Winchester Road, Alsford, said, if you're drunk or on drug, you should be charged money, because it's a huge burden on A&E. They are a low priority. It is not just about money. There needs to be a reconstruction of the whole thing. Emily Scar, 23, cafe supervisor of Quarry Road, Winchester, said, I think people should be supported who work there, but I haven't got any personal complaints. I've read some positive comments on Facebook from friends, though. And finally, Paul Marsh, 63, retired of Banbridge, said, my experience when I've gone there has always been good, but thankfully I've had no reason to go into A&E recently.
We're going back through the mists of time and delving into our dusty records now for historical news items from our files, starting with 25 years ago, read by Shirley.
Right, 25 years ago, January 19th, 1990. Trivia Whiz Kid wins pot of cash. Gambling has proved to be a nice little earner for a Winchester man who can equal most people's salaries by playing general knowledge machines in pubs and bars. The Trivia Whiz Kid won so much money last year that he could afford to pay cash for a brand new G-registered car. And over the next 10 years, he expects his winning ways to raise £80,000. Enough to buy a house without needing a mortgage. 27-year-old Paul wishes to remain anonymous so that he is not recognised by landlords who, understandably perhaps, are unhappy about his ability to clean them out. And the second part of this is more than 30 Eastleigh residents and one in Southampton have been advised to vacate their houses during the Army's operation to clear demolition charges at Eastleigh Airport during the weekend of February 17th and 18th. Local authorities are bracing themselves for a weekend of chaos as the Army move to clear 20 pipe mines laid during World War II to deny the airfield to German invaders. The exclusion zone around the airport will affect the occupiers of 14 houses at the southern end of Doncaster Road and one house just south of the airport.
Andrew's going to take us back 50 years.
50 years to January 16th, 1965. Headquarters nearly complete. Hampshire's new police headquarters, now nearing completion at West Hill, Winchester, is to be fitted with furnishings worth £21,500 and new equipment valued at £9,730. The furniture will, according to the clerk to the authority, Mr. G. Andrew Wheatley, set a standard which, at least in terms of cost, is higher than that which the County Council would regard as proper for their own offices. Furniture at the old headquarters had, in the main, been very old and much of it affected by woodwork. Second article. Introducing a budget for the coming financial year of nearly £2,900,000, the Chief Constable, Mr. D. Osmond, told Hampshire and Isle of Wight Police Authority at Winchester on Monday of a new and dangerous type of criminal who's making the task of the police more difficult and expensive. Mr. Osmond said that although the post-war crime rise in Hampshire had been followed by a lull in 1955, since that time crime had again increased steadily. Last year we had another 20% increase in recorded crime, something over 20,000 crimes being reported, double the 1955 figure. In that time, there has been an increase of about 30% in population.
Way back 100 years now, over to you, Lynn.
And this is from January the 16th, 1915. Ambulance to go to the front line. The Winchester motor ambulance passed through the city late on Monday last on its way to Folkestone, whence it was to cross to the front on Tuesday morning. It is very much regretted that there was no time to let subscribers know about the coming of the ambulance. It was seen by some on its way through Winchester, among whom was a member of our staff, who can say with every confidence that the money of the subscribers has been extremely well spent. As a motor vehicle, the ambulance is everything that could be desired. And its second piece is, we mentioned last week that the Royal Hampshire County Hospital had admitted what was a record number of patients on any one day in the whole of its experience, viz. 148. This week, the splendid institution has exceeded even that number and gives a return of 150.
And finally, Shirley's going to take us back 200 years ago.
Yes, 200 years ago. January 16th, 1815. Coal distributed among the poor. The poor of the parish of St. Bartholomew, Hyde, near this city, returned thanks to Mr. J. Wright for his very acceptable donation of upwards of 200 bushels of coal, which he has this week distributed amongst them. Sunday being the commencement of the new year, the poor of the parish of Byton were bountifully regaled by the Marquis of Buckingham with a good dinner consisting of roast and boiled beef, plum puddings and ale sent from Avington. The numerous tenants of the generous donor paid every attention to the comforts of the poor, and the whole was conducted with the greatest regularity. And the second part of this piece, a favourite harrier dog belonging to Messrs. Farncombe of Bishopstone Place near Lewes was, the beginning of last week, on the removal of a barley stack, found therein buried, alive and well, after being missing 8 days, and apparently without having suffered any diminution of health or strength from his abstinence and close imprisonment, as he embraced his liberation with activity and playfulness.
We're now going to have an alternative look at the news. Yes, it's Balgarham Diary, read by Andrew.
Three articles today. The first one, please mind your language for foreign students. A group of foreign students have been in Winchester learning about British culture. But not for them the cultural delights of pints of lager, a curry and a DVD. They are students acting as foreign language assistants at Peter Simmons College. They are here for 8 months to help the A-level students with their studies. As well as improving the A-level students' language skills, the assistants are also finding that their own spoken English is benefiting as their understanding of the British culture and weather increases. Having resident foreign language assistants is a fantastic and beneficial scheme for our students, says Fiona Hartley, head of French at Simmons. And the college has been participating in this British Council-run programme for many years. She added, the FLAs add another dimension to the learner's experience as they lift their language lessons off the page, helping language students to develop their awareness of other cultures. And there's a picture of the six young language assistants. I'll just go through the names. There's Patty Gilberto from Spain, Melissa Sumuller from Germany, Veronique Dumont from Quebec, Pietro Vincentini from Italy, Arthur Bienfait from France, and Maria de Lourdes Rodriguez Guzman from Spain. And the second article. Curious about Tesco's plans for Bar End. Those with long memories will recall that around 20 years ago, Tesco wanted to build a superstore on the Garrison Ground playing fields at Bar End. Local opposition scuppered the plans, and instead the firm opted to build their store on part of the former bypass up at Winnall. With the recent news about the review of the company's stores and plans, Belgarum was wondering what it means for their Bar End holding. Fit for the Future will be especially interested as it wants the City Council to build a new sports centre with a 50-metre swimming pool there. Tesco was asked for comment, but had not replied at the time of going to press. And the third article from Belgarum, Beau or the President's Man? It was sodden hankies all round when reporter Wesley Rock, there's a picture of him, left the Chronicle for the Big Smoke. His shorthand may have erred on the swirly, but Rock had proved an exceptional tea maker, especially when the newspaper was on a tight print deadline. In the last 6 months, his rise at The Times has been meteoric, and he is now editor of The Times tablet edition. One key question remains unanswered, though. Before plumping for a life-breaking news, Rock was in the French Foreign Legion. So is he now putting the military man-management skills garnered during his stint in uniform to good use in his new role? Belgarum imagines his life now comprises some sort of heady mix of All the President's Men and Beau Geste, complete with saluting and camels.
Our first person this week is by Khalid Aziz, and it's read by Lynn.
And this starts, Je ne suis pas Charlie. The words of a cousin who took to the hallowed pages of Facebook to argue, I thought quite cogently, that the cartoonists of Charlie Hebdo had caused great offence to the likes of her, who revere my prophet more than words could ever say, and then, in a second paragraph, explain how she shared the outrage of the most of the Western world at the horrific killings of Paris. Were the perpetrators merely delinquents, using the cover of religion to justify their actions and give some meaning to their nihilistic and ultimately futile lives? There is no doubt that the so-called radicalisation of such individuals occurs, and that there are more disaffected youths lining up to do unspeakable things in the name of their perverted calling. So, what to do? Certainly more vigilance is required of us all, and perhaps we have to accept that the security services need access, which does not, for practical reasons at least, mean blanket surveillance, to our internet traffic. There are those who say society too should be sending a message to the Islamic world that their Allah and Prophet doesn't hold any blocking trumps when it comes to satire. Freedom of speech is not negotiable. But can that be true? Freedom of speech doesn't confer the freedom to shout fire in a crowded theatre, obviously, so there are limits. Should those limits extend to not offending religious groups? If so, we would have missed out on the mordant humour of the likes of Dave Allen, whose sketch of an Afrikaner priest insisting to a black cleaner on his knees, scrubbing the church floor, "This church is for whites only, don't let me catch you praying," rightfully held apartheid up to ridicule. In the elements of my upbringing that were Islamic, there were plenty of easy targets for satire, but of course we held our young tongues. Society across the world needs humour, which often needs to be caustic if it's to make its mind. The trouble with the Danish cartoons, which caused the original offence and then were taken up by the French publication, is that they were not uniformly funny. One or two amused me, particularly the one about Muhammad at the gates of heaven sending back a long line of newly blown up shaheeds with the words, "Stop, stop, we've run out of virgins." Was it the portrayal of the prophet that was blasphemous, or the idea behind the gag? No doubt someone, Muller, will be quick to respond, hopefully with the pen which, as the prophet himself said, in terms is mightier than the sword. Finally, in such dismal times, some good news. Congratulations to Reham Khan, who, for too brief a time, graced our tea time screens with the weather, has married my old school chum, Imran Khan. I couldn't work out why she was giving up a promising broadcasting career in the UK to return to Pakistan. Now I know. Congratulations to both.
It's over to Shirley for the editorial comment.
And this one is headed, "The public's right to know is paramount." Whenever the media reports on the National Health Service, there are usually cries that negative publicity is damaging healthcare. Medical staff are doing a fine job, and such publicity is demoralising, the media critics say. For many people, newspapers should not dare to criticise any aspect of health work. The Chronicle is the first to acknowledge that the majority of doctors and nurses are doing a fine job in highly difficult circumstances caused by the spike in people going to A&E units across the country. But it seems things are going wrong in the A&E department at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. People are waiting on trolleys in draughty corridors for 12 hours or more, including an 82-year-old heart attack victim who had to suffer the indignity of raising her top in semi-public to be examined. We make no apology of highlighting these issues, not least the question of how the four-hour target time is being recorded at the unit. Our coverage will help spark debate on how the NHS and social services are to be funded, especially in an age of potentially unending austerity. The NHS is not a private club that should be outside the media's scrutiny. The public's right to know is paramount.
And it's time for What's On. Okay, on Wednesday, January the 21st, Finding the Words for Prayer, Darkness Outside, Inside the Radio's Prayer. That's at United Church, Jury Street, Winchester, 12:30 to 1:15 p.m. It's free, but donations are welcome. Sandwiches and refreshments are available. On Thursday, January the 22nd, there's a chamber music concert, number one, at the Music School Hall, Winchester College, College Street, 7 p.m. It's Haydn, Glazunov, Chopin and Schumann. Further details, 01962-621-122. And another concert on Saturday, January the 24th. There's two concerts, actually, an evening of music at Winchester Cathedral. Music to bring in the new year, 6:30 p.m. And it's the pre-concert music by Hampshire County Youth Orchestra, Harps and Percussion. Concert number one is 7 p.m. to 8:10 p.m. Bach, Whiteacre, Maxwell Davis, Stopford. The County, Hampshire County Youth Orchestra and King Edward VI School Chamber Choir. Concert number two, 9 p.m. to 9:50 p.m. Hampshire County Youth Chamber Orchestra, Violin soloist Tom Bolsch is the reworking of Vivaldi's Four Seasons by Max Richter, etc. Standing room event only. Some chairs available for those in need. £10 adults, £5 concessionaries from Cathedral Box Office or 01962 857 275. Tickets are valid for both concerts. On Monday, January the 26th, there is a discovery lecture called The Portus Project. It's in the cafe area at the Winchester Discovery Centre, Jury Street, SO238SB, from 7:45pm to 8:45pm approximately. It's a lecture by Dr. Graham Earle on latest developments from ongoing archaeological project at Ancient Rome's port, followed by a question and answer session. It's part of a lecture series in association with Universities of Winchester and Southampton, engaging general audience with a variety of academic topics. And it's free. On Tuesday, January the 27th, there's a concert, Space for Peace, in Winchester Cathedral, 7pm. Local, national, community and school choirs from Jewish, Christian, other faiths and secular sources share musical vigil for peace in various parts of the cathedral. The congregation will move around the building, lighting candles, praying in overall musical sound. It's free with a retiring collection to help defray costs. On Tuesday, January the 27th, the Battle of the Bulge, MacDonald Gallery, Gurkha Museum, Winchester Military Museum, Visitor Centre. It's the entrance to the Peninsula Barracks in Romsey Road, Winchester SO238TS. Doors open at 6:30 for 7pm. It's a reassessment of the fight for the Ardennes. It's £15, including canapés and a glass of wine, from 01962 842 832 or Mary Brown at thegurkhamuseum.co.uk. On Thursday, January the 29th, the Chamber Music Orchestra. It's the Music School Hall, Winchester College, College Street, 7pm. It's Bach, Mozart and Brahms. Further details from 01962 621 122. On Thursday the 29th, there's a steam pinnace 199, the 100-year refit. It's the Cinema, Hampshire Record Office, Sussex Street, Winchester, SO238TH, and it's from 1:15pm to 1:45pm. It's a lecture by Martin Marks. It's free, no booking needed. Inquiries at archives@hants.gov.uk. Or there is a telephone number, 01962 846 154. And finally, from this long list, on Saturday, January the 31st, Winchester City Festival Choir, Harvey Hall, Winchester, SO211HA. That's St. Swithin's School, actually. And that's at 7:30pm. John Rutter's Gloria, also music by Briggs, Williams and Maylor. £14, students and under 18s, £7. And you can get tickets from theatre or box office, and that's 01962, and that's 840440. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 16th of January at 8:02am and begins at 4:28pm. On Wednesday the 21st of January, it ends at 7:57am and begins at 4:36pm. So it's starting to get lighter again, isn't it? If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. If there's a problem with your Sapphire, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. And now we're going to continue with further items of general news, starting with one read by Andrew.
Okay, the first one, rather a sad article by Emma Stretfield. Families heartbreak over son's fatal crash. Drink driving out of character, they tell inquest. A family have described their devastation after losing their teenage son in a crash when he was more than three times the drink drive limit. The parents of James Langrish say it was totally out of character and they could not understand why he decided to drive home after a night out with friends. The 19-year-old's car collided head-on with a lorry on the A32 between Wickham and Knowle on August the 22nd last year. Witnesses described how his car came across the road into the path of the lorry on a bend. Tests revealed Mr. Langrish of Soberton, who died from head injuries at the scene, had been over 3.1 times the drink drive limit. An investigation found Mr. Langrish's black Corsa was likely to be travelling at around 75 miles per hour on the 50-mile-an-hour road, and the Scania HGV driver, Geoffrey Steele, at 39 miles per hour at the time of the crash at around 3 a.m. Police crash investigator, PC Emma Clifford, said the most likely reason the Corsa had veered across the road was a combination of the Corsa's speed and the driver being over 3.1 times the limit. Mr. Steele, then 52, from Southampton, told how he braked, steering away from the vehicle and breaking his wrist in the process. The inquest in Portsmouth heard how Mr. Langrish, a former Portsmouth Grammar School pupil, had drunk a 2-litre bottle of cider, another pint of cider, and a couple of vodka shots before heading to Tiger Tiger nightclub in Portsmouth at around midnight, where friends saw him get another drink. Close friend Robert Chen said after they got separated, he expected to find Mr. Langrish back at his house in Portsmouth to stay over as normal, but found his car gone. Mr. Langrish was working as a kitchen porter at Green's Restaurant in Wickham Square while on a gap year. He was to study psychology at university the following month. His mother, Joanne, last saw her son on the morning the day before his death. Sobbing, Mrs. Langrish, who said she could not remember if she had kissed her son goodbye, described him as a funny, caring, and very responsible young man. "He really, really was my rock," she told the inquest. "He was brought up with the right morals and values, and it's such a shock to me. The circumstances of his death were not what I would expect of James." His father, David, from Knowle, said his son never drove after drinking, and he was at a loss as to why he made that decision. Coroner for Portsmouth and South East Hampshire, Robert Stone, recorded a verdict of accidental death. In a statement after the inquest, the family said, "We do know it was never his intention to drive home that fateful night, and whatever led him to make the decision must have been, to him, unavoidable. We are totally devastated, and our lives will never be the same without him."
Scrapping late bus leaves village cut off. Villagers near Winchester say they have been cut off following cuts to evening buses. The spring service, which runs between Winchester, Kingsworthy and Springvale, has seen a reduced timetable since January the 4th. The last evening bus from the city is at 7:09 p.m, which commuter Dan Conroy, 45, a managing director of an engineering consultancy of London Road, says leaves him and others stranded after arriving by train from London Waterloo. If you want to leave London Waterloo after 6 p.m, you can't get a bus back into Kingsworthy, he said. The late bus was always full. There were loads of people and there was always a queue at the bus stop, but they, Stagecoach, said it was empty. He said although commuters are encouraged to cycle, walk or use public transport to make the city greener, they are being left with little alternative but to drive. "It just seems the absolute inverse of what we are being encouraged to do," he added. Other residents say the lack of later evening services means workers and youngsters with late shifts have to rely on family or friends to give them lifts. Stella Bowling, 52, a childminder of Springvale Road, said many people work from 10 a.m. until 7, but are often unable to make the 7:09 bus from City Road. "It's quite common to work those hours these days," she said. "Now youngsters have no choice but to rely on other people to get home, and it takes away their independence." She said the service has been reduced by an hour and a half and is cutting Kingsworthy off. Businesswoman Susan Tinkler, 50, of Bull Farm, said she is worried about the impact on her self-catering business because the last evening bus into Winchester leaves Kingsworthy at 7:27. One of the validations about not having facilities in Kingsworthy is because we have them right on our doorstep in Winchester, because you can only get into town in the evenings now if you have a car. The parking is so expensive in Winchester. If young people can use the bus, that will also help traffic congestion. Bus operator Stagecoach reduced the service after subsidies were cut earlier this month. On the spring timetable, it says evening services will no longer run due to a low number of passengers. A Stagecoach spokesman blamed Hampshire County Council for withdrawing the service, but did not comment further.
This one is headed, Archaeologists Dig Deep at Barton Farm Site. 2,000 years of history is set to be unearthed as archaeologists get digging at the site of a major housing development in Winchester. Work has begun at Barton Farm as archaeologists delve into the site's past ahead of the building of 2,000 private and affordable homes. New evidence suggests the site was once used as a military camp, occupied for a short period in the 1700s by Hessian mercenaries en route to fight for Britain in North America. The investigations are expected to take up to 16 weeks. Any findings will be formally photographed and documented before being donated to the Hampshire Cultural Trust. Rob Westwood, Technical Director for Carla Holmes, Thames, said, "We have been working with consultants and archaeologists for many years to study the site, and we have a great opportunity before construction work begins later this year to uncover Barton Farm's past. We already know about some of the site's former uses, from a prehistoric farmstead to German military camp, but it will be exciting to see this history revealed."
And another commuting one. Station to be manned until late in the evening. Commuters welcome plan after worries about safety. Commuters in Winchester have welcomed plans to man the city station until late in the evening. Winchester Railway Station will now have security staff until 11 p.m. following pressure from commuters worried about safety. There were several concerns raised, particularly relating to women travelling on their own. Now the platforms will see more staff members donning high-vis jackets, working until an hour before midnight, something regular commuter Joanna Lewis has said is a long time coming. "We pay enough for our tickets, so full service should last late into the evening," she said. "It's not just about having help if something goes wrong with your ticket or onward transport. It's much more about feeling confident to travel later at night and to feel safe, especially as you leave the station. Almost everyone I know who commutes has a story about being approached by strangers once or twice. It's not just women commuters who have felt threatened leaving the train. Lots of single travellers returning home late, including men, teenagers and the elderly, have said the same. There's still a way to go. The lane from the station car park onto the Andover Road is still very unsafe at night for people on foot and for cyclists. And, as the station gets busier and busier, I would hope that it will be manned beyond 11 p.m. Even with this welcome extension, if you leave Waterloo after the 9:35 p.m. train, then no staff will be around when you arrive at Winchester. Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Brine, who has petitioned for this change since his Ask South West Trains meeting in November 2013, said, "This was a key point raised at my public meeting, as passengers arriving back into the station late at night, especially women, said they felt vulnerable and wanted to see a much later staffing presence. I know it's not been easy for South West Trains to achieve this, particularly in a time of incredibly tight budgets, but it's really pleasing they have found a way." A Southwest Trains Network Rail Alliance spokesman said, "We work closely with our passengers and stakeholders to find ways to continue to improve our services, and it is good news that Winchester Station is now staffed until 11 p.m.
Pluck tells the story of historic Green, and this is headed by a photograph of the Residents Association Chairman Carol Orchard, with Karen Curran, Robin Freeman, Alan Fowler and Iris Gould at the unveiling of a commemorative plaque. Winchester residents have been celebrating the history of their local park. Oram Arbor's Residents Association members gathered at the open space near Clifton Terrace to unveil a new plaque. The chairman, Carol Orchard, said, "This is such a historic site. It was daft not to have one. People often ask who was Oram, and we wanted to cement this site in some small way." The group was able to pay for the plaque, as well as a few benches, through its membership fees. The plaque was first thought up by the late Tim Curran, a passionate member who fought to have a marker on the former site of the city's fireworks display. Secretary Iris Gould said, "Tim was the leading light of this, and it was his great dream that we would have a plaque here to put up. It's in memory of him as much as it is for the city of Winchester." Committee member Robin Freeman said, "This and St Catherine's Hill were the original settlement sites of the city. There used to be sheep held here every year, but there were protests against that because they enclosed the area. The Green was once the site of the city's annual fireworks display, but that was moved to the River Park Leisure Centre in 1995 as attendances increased beyond 10,000. The plaque reads in park, "This open space is part of the second largest Iron Age enclosure in southern England and dates from 250 BC.
And this one is headed "Cash Boost for Friday Football Project." An outrage scheme which uses football to keep Winchester teenagers off the streets has won a funding boost from Hampshire's police chief. The Friday Football Project, offering at-risk boys aged 11 to 19 the chance to have a kickabout and steer clear of alcohol abuse, won a £2,920 grant from Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes. Around 25 boys use pitches at Henry Beaufort School every week to let off steam, chat to youth workers, and grow up away from the temptation of Friday nights on the street. They just have to bring their boots with a £1 donation, and the team from Winchester Street Reach puts on games which allows them to mix with other age groups and learn respect through sportsmanship. Project manager Ben Martin said, "There is no youth club provision in week and hairstock, and the young people we encounter are disengaged and often lead risky lifestyles. The fact that it was their idea and we helped them realise it is part of why it's so successful. Everyone's heard of Friday football. It's got a grassroots community feel to it." Mr. Hayes said, "Giving people a chance to improve their own well-being through early intervention is much more cost-effective than dealing with more serious issues once people become involved in criminal behaviour." And with this article, we have a rather nice colour picture of a sunny football field at Henry Beaufort School where these lads are having a kickabout.
And we're back on the buses with evening bus services cut. Controversial cuts to evening bus services have come into force. New timetables were launched across Winchester and Hampshire this week as county chiefs looked to cut £1.2 million from their transport bill. 14 services are affected in the Winchester district, with no buses after 7:40 p.m. on the 1, 3, 5 and Spring routes through the city centre. Number 3 and 5A late buses will run until 11:40 p.m. from Thursday to Saturday, while the 46 from Winchester to Southampton General Hospital will now terminate at North Battersley. Changes have also been made to the number 2, 6A, 36, 63, 66, 67 and 68 routes, with other services affected across Hampshire. Councillor John Biddlecombe, chairman of Littleton and Hairstock Parish Council, fears elderly people in his community will struggle to shop or visit doctors in Winchester after cuts to the 68 bus. He said, "Out of school term time, we are down to one bus in the morning and one in the afternoon."
Mental health patient took own life. A Winchester mental health patient died after taking a lethal dose of a psychiatric drug. The body of Andrew Beechcroft, Beecroft, who had changed his name by deed poll from Justin Byrne, was found in his flat in Worthy Road on the afternoon of May the 27th last year. Post-mortem tests found he had a cocktail of drugs in his body, including a legal high and an overdose of the medication he was prescribed for chronic paranoid schizophrenia. Consultant psychiatrist Dr. Stefan Gleason said Mr. Beecroft's mental illness had begun after he took cannabis and amphetamines while in Australia in 1999, and he had never fully recovered. "He was a changed man when he returned from Australia," he told Monday's Winchester Inquest. Dr. Gleason added that Mr. Beecroft's use of a legal high in the hours before his death could have caused him to lose his judgment. The 37-year-old complained of hearing voices during his daily visit by Winchester's community mental health team on the morning of 26th of May, but showed no suicidal tendencies. His last contact with medics was a telephone call at 10 p.m. that night. Police missed his suicide note, which was found in the pocket of his tracksuit bottom 7 weeks later. Senior Central and South Hampshire coroner Graham Short recorded a termination that Mr. Beecroft took his own life while suffering from a severe mental illness.
Agents illegally tout parking permits. A Winchester estate agent has been warned by the City Council after it tried to illegally secure residents-only parking permits for clients not entitled to them. Fox and Sons wrote to residents in the Full Flood area asking if anyone had any spare permits that could be sold to new residents. A black market has arisen in recent years as new homes built in the city centre do not have a right to the sought-after permits that allow on-street parking near homes. Sam McCarthy, lettings manager at Fox and Sons, based on the High Street, wrote to householders in Cranworth Road and Brassey Road asking if anyone would be willing to sell an unwanted permit. The company has since admitted it was a one-off that will not be repeated. The City Council heard about the initiative and has taken action to stop it. A City Council spokesman said a formal legal letter had been sent to the company, followed by an officer visit. He said Fox and Sons has stopped the initiative and he does not believe other local agents are doing anything similar. In a statement, the council said, "Any resident who sells a permit or does not use it in accordance with the parking order can have their permit entitlement cancelled. Anyone who knowingly makes a false statement for the purposes of obtaining a resident's parking permit is liable for a fine of up to £1,000 under Section 115 of the Road Traffic Regulation Act 1984. Anyone conspiring to assist them will also be liable. The council investigates all allegations of abuse of parking permits. This involves regular observation visits to check patterns of parking. If abuse is suspected, the council will write to the registered holder of the permit asking for an explanation. If the permit is being used improperly, the council can and will withdraw it. In a statement, Fox and Sons said, "Acting for one prospective tenant, we made inquiries to homeowners about the possibility of using an unused parking permit on either Cranworth Road or Brossey Road. We would like to apologise for any upset caused and make clear that this was not a deliberate attempt to override the council's policy on parking in the area or engage in the buying and selling on of multiple permits, simply a request in response to the need of one individual looking to move into the area. As soon as we were aware of our mistake, all attempts to speak to local residents and potentially purchase a permit for parking for our tenant were immediately stopped."
Pothole cash not enough, says councillor. The money Hampshire will get from a £6 billion government scheme to fight potholes is not enough, a senior councillor has warned. The county is due to receive £140 million to spend on its badly damaged and crumbling roads over the next 6 years. But Conservative Transport Chief Sean Woodward, pictured, says the money is insufficient to cover the huge task he faces and accused Westminster of whittling away his budget. Meanwhile, Southampton City Council will get £9 million to fix its worst affected roads from now until 2021. The government's announcement follows a succession of severe winters and devastating floods, badly damaging stretches of carriageway and leaving councils desperately playing catch-up with road maintenance. Transport Secretary Patrick McLaughlin said the total package will plug more than 18 million potholes. However, Councillor Woodward has hit out at the scheme, saying that last winter's floods alone caused £36 million worth of damage. "It's concerning that having got to this position, the money is being whittled away over 6 years," he said. "We are going to have to fight for the challenged fund and work extremely hard for resilience in road repairs. Our priority is to keep Hampshire moving, but it's going to be more difficult with officers spending more time filling out competitive bids rather than organising repairs." But Southampton City Council Transport Cabinet member Jackie Raymond was thankful for the cash. She said, "Our road network is the city's largest infrastructure asset. This grant funding announced by the government is in line with what we anticipated and will be used to maintain and enhance our roads and bridges over the next 6 years." Mr. McLaughlin said the investment represents part of the government's long-term economic plan and will put an end to short-term fixes in road repairs.
Help for Children of Africa is in the bag. Members of a Winchester club have been working to help people in southern Africa. Members of the Inner Wheel Club of Winchester are pictured with some of the backpacks they have prepared to send to the charity Mary's Meals, based in Malawi. The packs contain pens, pencils, toys, books and toiletry, and encourage children to attend school where they receive a daily hot meal. Mary's Meals now feeds nearly 1 million children every school day across the world, and the charity has been adopted by Inner Wheel clubs in the UK. Inner Wheel is an international organisation closely linked to Rotary that was originally founded to unite wives and daughters of Rotarians.
Dying tree to be felled. A dying tree branded a danger to a Winchester community is to be cut down. The rotting horse chestnut in Denham Close could fall on homes or pedestrians if it is not felled, city planners heard. Resident Colin Butterworth has cared for the malformed plant for 28 years, but won the right to bring it down at last Thursday's planning committee. "You can't imagine the fear lying in bed hearing a gale battering this suspect tree," he said. It is potentially very dangerous. Traumatic weather conditions are worsening, and this tree does not have enough merit as an amenity to risk lives. 9 neighbours supported Mr. Butterworth's plans, and councillors who acted against officer advice agreed that the tree was a danger to the community. Wind has toppled several trees in the neighbourhood in the last 3 decades, with one crashing through the roof of a teenager's bedroom.
3-year deadline for doctor's surgery. A doctor's surgery which shut suddenly just before Christmas must be replaced in the next 3 years, a civic boss has said. Springvale Surgery in Kingsworthy is set for urgent repairs after fire and electrical safety problems led to doctors shutting its doors without warning on December the 18th. Steve Tilbury, City Council Corporate Director, could not say when it would reopen, adding that the ageing building was not suitable for long-term provision. Locals gathered last week to protest about Friarsgate GP practice's unannounced closure, which has forced residents without cars to travel for more than an hour to the nearest surgery. GPs and nurses are working out of Friarsgate's practice in Stockbridge Road Week until the Pound Road surgery reopens. The City Council met doctors and NHS bosses last Wednesday and sent surveyors to evaluate the work needed to reopen the practice, which serves around 2,000 patients. Mr. Tilbury told councillors last week, "I cannot offer a timescale for reopening because we need our surveying time to go in and have a look at the works which need doing as a matter of urgency. There are other issues with the premises, which probably mean they are not suitable for long-term provision. Repairs will keep the surgery open for another 3 years," he later told the Hampshire Chronicle. Friarsgate rents the building from the council but was not initially aware that it was responsible for repairs, Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for Environment, Health and Wellbeing, said. Responding to a written question from Councillor Anne Weir, she said, "The City Council has been in discussion with the practice about how this situation could be resolved for some weeks and was under the impression that the dialogue was continuing. We were not notified that the practice intended to stop using the premises." Practice manager Bob Woods said bosses wrote to patients immediately, informing them of new arrangements. "At no time have the residents of Kingsworthy and the patients of the Friarsgate practice been without suitable and professional health cover," he said in a statement. "All appointments have been relocated temporarily to our main site in Week and continue to be attended to by the same GPs and nurses who have looked after them for many years. We did not take the decision to close the branch site lightly and only did so to ensure patient safety." After the meeting, Mr. Tilbury said the building's age and location made it unsuitable. "It's certainly come to a point where the requirements of a high-quality primary care facility are different these days," he said. He said doctors gave the council enough warning about the need for repairs, but declined further comment when asked whether more could have been done to prevent the closure.
Traders bump a festive take at the tills. Last-minute rush makes all the difference. Winchester had yet another bumper year of Christmas trading, boosted by last-minute rush between December 21st and the 24th. Locals and tourists alike descended on the perfect Christmas, drawn in by the Christmas market, and spent thousands on festive trinkets and traditional Yuletide food. For Winchester Tri Street, trading rose from the previous year, with the total footfall up from 346,899 in 2013 to 355,584 in 2014, from December the 1st to the 24th for both the upper and lower parts of the town. The square proved to be one of the most populous parts of the city, attracting 75,937 visitors in December, a rise of 22.6% on 2013. The Christmas sales also drew in a large number of visitors, with 101,432 coming between Boxing Day and January the 4th, an increase of 8.2% on 2013. Winchester BID manager Catherine Turner said, What's interesting about the High Street figure is, up until December the 20th, it was showing a small decrease of 0.5%. Adding the last 4 days in before Christmas showed a positive figure, meaning that lots of people did leave their shopping to the last minute. It's encouraging to see that our national Christmas campaign, The Perfect Christmas, coordinated in partnership with Winchester Cathedral and jointly promoted by the City Council, had a positive effect with an increase in footfall of 6.5% in December in the High Street, compared with last year, and areas of the main thoroughfare are also showing favourable figures. She added, "Of course, we won't know how or if this increase has impacted sales until we receive feedback through our business barometer. But speaking with a few of our members, retailers tended to trade favourably during weekdays, and then this would switch to the hospitality trade at the weekend, when visitors from organised coach tours were at their highest. Several stores reported bumper Christmas sales, with one stating 2014 had been its best year yet. Childhood's Dream Limited co-owner, Susan Wyman, said it had been a record year for the Brooks-based shop, with sales up 17% on the fourth quarter from the same period last year. Simon Barwood, spokesman for Winchester Cathedral, said it was too early to reveal this year's takings, but the success of the market was largely owed to its corporate partners. Partly as a result of some favourable weather, but also down to some excellent partnerships, notably with the City Council and Winchester BID, footfall has seemed to be higher across the city, and there have been more skaters at the Cathedral Rink than in past years," he said.
And I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending 16th of January 2015. Thank you to our editors, Liz and Gordon Legg. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Andrew Smith.
Goodbye.
And Lynn Parker.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet with the laminated card, and please place the address label inside the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.